From The Conversation, this is Politics with Michelle Grattan, a podcast where we hear from politicians and experts on the issues of the day.
The most comprehensive Australian data on loneliness, paradoxically an increasingly common condition in our so-called connected society, is to be released this Friday. It's been produced by Australia's peak body for psychologists, the Australian Psychologists Society. Previous data from the Melbourne Institute's HILDA survey suggests 1 in 6 Australians are affected by loneliness. The dimensions of the problem have been recognised overseas. The US Surgeon General, for example, has called it a growing health epidemic. And in the UK, there's been appointed what's called a ministerial lead for loneliness to coordinate a cross-portfolio governmental response. Today we're speaking with Andrew Giles, Labor's Shadow Assistant Minister for Schools, who's taken a particular interest in this issue and is working out a policy response for the opposition. Andrew Giles, this might sound a very obvious question, but when policymakers are considering the problem of loneliness, how do they actually define it? Because many people would say, well, we all feel lonely at times.
Yeah, well, I think it's actually a really great question, and it's fundamental to having any policy response to loneliness. It's pretty clear that feeling lonely isn't the same as being alone, and that while everyone feels lonely sometimes, what we now understand, what the experts understand, is that consistent feelings of loneliness bring really negative health and other consequences to people. And understanding what's driving this is really, really important. Often we relate loneliness with social isolation, and that's obviously something which is a big part of it. But it's the feeling of loneliness, the individual experience of loneliness, that is a distinct issue that brings distinct negative consequences. So better understanding that is absolutely fundamental to fixing the problem.
So what you're saying is that this is a social phenomenon, but also, in a way, a psychological phenomenon.
Yeah, definitely. I think we understand intuitively that some people are very comfortable in their own company, others are not. We know that people can feel lonely even when they're surrounded by people who are at surface value, welcoming. So understanding the different effects on different individuals is really important. While I think, you know, I'm also concerned about improving social cohesion and social connectedness, that isn't the sum total of the issue of loneliness.
Why is the problem growing? Is it because of changes in the nature of society overall, or at least in part because of that? Might we actually, for example, see less loneliness in a simpler, albeit poorer society where there's less breakdown in the extended family, for example?
Again, I think that is a really interesting question. One thing is, I've got a general concern that often people in public life look backwards with rose-tinted glasses, and I think we should be reluctant to proceed on the assumption that people were less lonely in simpler and perhaps less materially well-off societies. But it does appear to be the case that loneliness is growing, that more Australians are reporting it, and very significantly and concerningly, that this appears to be a phenomenon that affects young people particularly. That's been what a big study the BBC conducted in the UK indicated. So whatever is driving this, and we've got to work much harder to understand what those drivers are, it appears that this is a problem that is growing as our demographics change.
I think people can understand how many older people might feel lonely after, for example, they lose a partner. But this problem of loneliness infecting younger people, do we have any idea why this is so?
Yeah, look, the cliche of a lonely person is the individual in an aged care facility who perhaps has lost their partner and isn't visited, and that obviously is part of the puzzle. But understanding why it is that so many people aged 18 to 24 report feeling lonely and report its impact on them is something that requires us to dig deeper. One of the big issues that I'm interested in exploring and think we have to explore is the impact of social media on this. Young people today are the first generation who've grown up with social media, and it appears to be the case that this is making people more rather than less lonely.
Is it because they spend more time on devices and less time physically interacting with their peers?
Yeah, well, I think that is something which we've got to get a better understanding of, Michelle. At one level, social media opens up opportunities for connection that weren't present previously. People can build relationships that aren't confined by geography. But we're seeing also a lot of evidence of the harm, whether it's in the form of direct bullying or other forms of withdrawal from social engagement, that social media may be a big driver of. And again, it's something that I think a big part of government's role in this is understanding what changes this societal change is driving in individuals, how they feel, how they act, how they experience loneliness.
Could it mean that people have more opportunity, for example, to compare themselves with others, find themselves wanting, and therefore retreat into self and end up lonely?
Well, I think that sounds very, very plausible, Michelle, and I think there's a lot of evidence looking more directly at the mental health impacts of social media, and there's some evidence, particularly amongst young women, of all of those phenomena having psychiatric consequences. But I think it's clear that sense of withdrawal can also be a consequence of people experiencing other people's lives in what's most likely to be a very idealised form in the social media presentation, and feeling their own life, their experiences, can't match that.
There's some suggestion that loneliness, rather like depression, is contagious. What does this mean, and particularly what implications does it have from the perspective of policy?
Yeah, well, I think this comes back to the first question you raised, Michelle, that we've got to think of loneliness as something that is slightly distinct from simply not being socially connected. And for me, this notion, which the experts are talking quite a bit about, of loneliness being a contagious phenomenon, raises a bit of a challenge to most of the sort of policy interventions that people have talked about. Because if it is the case that loneliness is contagious, simply bringing a group of lonely people together may exacerbate the problem rather than solve it. So what it tells me is that we've got to have a much more nuanced approach to any policy intervention. And we can't simply rely on rebadging existing programs about whether it's about sporting involvement or otherwise, to simply bring lonely people together in the hope that they may feel better, they may experience loneliness less frequently.
This whole notion of something being contagious, though, can you unravel that a bit for us?
Yeah, look, again, obviously I'm far from an expert and on a very steep learning curve here, but as I understand it, one of the great challenges in this experience is that lonely people, obviously people who experience loneliness are almost by definition feeling unhappy, and bringing one group, one unhappy person into contact with other unhappy people may not get to the root cause of their unhappiness, and in fact may exacerbate it. So I guess what the suggestion of this phenomenon of contagion puts to me is to think about, I guess, putting a well-being frame onto our response to try and better understand what it is that's making an individual person feel lonely, feel alienated, feel isolated, and respond directly to that rather than simply adopting what has been in the past, what might be described as a one-size-fits-all approach of just finding ways to pull people or push people perhaps together.
On the other hand, while obviously bringing this well-being frame is desirable, you could say that in some cases, bringing lonely people together might make them more aware that their problem is not an isolated one. They might be able to relate to their shared problem, as it were.
Indeed, and I think that's, I guess, the thing we've got to just get a better understanding of, Michelle. Understanding also that we understand that many lonely people still feel that there's a stigma towards expressing their loneliness and how it's impacting their life. I think the great challenge is to create a bit of a national conversation about this, and that's something that I've been really interested to see play out in the UK through the work of the Joe Cox Commission, who talk about tackling loneliness one conversation at a time. So it's both calling for a governmental response and building an evidence base, but drawing out individual experiences of loneliness and understanding how they might be effectively responded to.
Do you see this mainly as a health issue or mainly as a social issue? And what are the health impacts in particular?
Yeah, well, I think it is both and also an economic issue, and I might come back to that very briefly. But I think we've got to understand loneliness as a public health problem. When the experts tell us here in the US and the UK that loneliness is as bad for us as smoking or obesity, I think the challenge for policymakers is to treat it just as seriously in terms of public health response as smoking or obesity. I think that's a really stark warning. It's something that I stood up and paid attention to when those comparisons were made. So something I think we need to consider as a society. But I think there's also this broader issue of the sort of country, the sort of society we want to live in. And there's been a lot of attention paid, perhaps without specifically looking at this loneliness lens, at the way in which people's experiences are being separated. And I think in big cities, especially, Michelle, as housing prices divide people, we're seeing more and more people's experience of life becoming confined. So I think anything that builds and boosts social connectedness is of itself a good thing. And I guess that last point I want to make is that there are increasing suggestions that individuals' experience of loneliness has a significant impact on their productivity at work and through that on our economic productivity, and there's some work being done around that to try and quantify its impact on the Australian economy. So there's this health lens, a social lens, and also an economic lens that attaches to our consideration of loneliness.
Even accepting that it's an important health issue, it would seem somewhat over-the-top comparison to say it's as significant as, for example, smoking in health consequences.
It is striking, but this is what has been said by people in better place to make those assessments than me in Australia, in the UK, and indeed in the US. And the US Surgeon General has referred to it as a growing health epidemic. He's used those terms in describing the health consequences of loneliness. So it is a serious health issue.
There was a recent UK paper put out on the question, and they've been working on it for a while. Are there any initiatives from either Britain or the United States that you see as particularly successful?
Well, I think the first thing that's happened in the UK was the establishment of the Jo Cox Foundation after her tragic death. And I think what that did was raise awareness.
She was the MP who was murdered during the Brexit time.
Yes, the referendum. Sorry, I should have said that. And one of the key themes of her short time in public life was building connectedness. And a feature of her legacy has been bipartisan work in the UK to try and break down those barriers of distrust, intolerance and hatred. But a particular focus of work has been on loneliness. And in the UK, I think the starting point was really about raising awareness, but also calling for government action. And I guess we've seen over the last couple of years both of those things happen with a range of community-based initiatives, largely about encouraging people to reach out to those around them and, I guess, show more empathy to other circumstances while building up sort of a bit of a governmental framework. But there have also been some really interesting bits of work done overseas, some of which may be transferable to the UK. There's a study that was conducted in the town of Frome, which I think is somewhere in the southwest of the UK, where a project a local GP undertook found that by effectively building and strengthening community groups, the lives of socially isolated people with health problems were significantly improved, and emergency admissions in that hospital fell quite significantly. And there have been some other studies to similar effect that shows that if we can find the right way to build social connections, we improve well-being. And trying to find which of those examples overseas are suitable to be applied in Australia is, I think, a big part of our public policy challenge here.
Just coming to your own policy work, you're the Labor spokesman on schools. How did you become interested in this issue, which is obviously outside your immediate responsibilities?
It was really it being brought to my attention that loneliness is something which is severely impacting young people. my understanding of loneliness had been the cliche that I described earlier in our conversation. And being told by experts and then hearing from students that this was a phenomenon that significantly impacted the lives of young people got me thinking about what could be done at a national level to impact on this. So it was really that sense of those people aged under 24, but particularly from my point of view, those still in school, feeling and experiencing loneliness that switched me on to this as being something that we should be talking about more in Australia. And as I looked into it a bit further, it struck me as very odd that in the UK there was a rich and sophisticated political conversation on this issue, a bipartisan one too, and it appears that there's an emerging one in some other countries, yet in Australia this is an area which seemed to be underdeveloped despite some great work by academics and some community organisations.
And what specific directions is your policy work taking, and what's your timetable? Are you going to put a draft policy to the shadow cabinet?
Yeah. Well,
and when would that be released publicly?
Well, obviously those questions would be a matter for the members of the shadow cabinet, but I've been working on a range of policy proposals with my colleagues in the shadow cabinet and the outer shadow ministry, because I guess the nature of this issue is that it covers a whole range of portfolios: mental health, ageing, the education portfolios, young Australians, the issues in the charity sector that connect to the work that Andrew Lee's been doing with his Disconnected Forums, and obviously health as well. So there's a range of internal stakeholders and colleagues who've got an interest. And I should, of course, have mentioned the social services and families area that Linda Burney's responsible for. So I've been trying to tease out some ideas for national interventions. And I think one of the key factors that cuts across all of this is building a better and Australian-specific evidence base, because there's so many questions we just don't know enough about when it comes to loneliness in Australia, its prevalence and its consequences.
So will we have a policy before the election on this from Labor?
I'm very hopeful that we will, Michelle, and I'm doing my best, and I've been really encouraged by the interest and support of many of my senior colleagues in that regard.
And do you think that policy will include a proposal for a minister or an assistant minister for loneliness?
Look, I think we've got to talk about how a national government can respond to loneliness, and whether that's a situation that's about ensuring that it's a broad lens that's applied across the work of government, whether it's about a purely bureaucratic situation, or, as has been in the case in the UK, a ministerial appointment. That's an obvious way of really ensuring that the issue is dealt with. Now, those sorts of appointments are a matter for the leader, and I'm not going to presume to make those judgments for him, but I think it is one of those things that a conversation has been started around. If we think loneliness is a big issue in Australia, and I think people are coming around to accept that is the case, how can a national government respond to that? I think that does involve some sort of structural approach. Now, whether that's through a political appointment or otherwise, I think it's a really vital conversation to play out now, and I hope to be an effective participant in that conversation.
But if you could change your arm a bit, not saying what will happen, but what you think should happen, you would like in government to see a front bencher with specific responsibilities in this area for coordinating across departments.
I think there has to be a coordinating role. Obviously, I don't have a fixed view about how that should be done, but I think in the past when this issue has been talked about, it's been seen as a subset of ageing, and that clearly does not reflect what is happening with loneliness in Australia, nor all the broad dimensions of how a national government can respond to the issue.
We're in the era of hyper-partisanship. I think you mentioned earlier that this was an area that was ripe for bipartisanship in a sense. Do you think that there is a prospect of, post-election anyway, getting a more bipartisan approach on these questions? I noticed you've got Liberal backbencher Julian Leeser co-sponsoring a motion which calls for a national response to better understand the scope of the challenges of loneliness and to look for an evidence-based response. So, in general, do you think we can get bipartisanship, and when is that motion likely to come up for parliamentary consideration? Will it be this year?
Look, there's a chance of it coming up in the last sitting week, the first week of December, and my fingers are crossed for that, Michelle, so to deal with that issue.
Busy week, keep them well crossed.
Yes, well, the last week can often be a long week too, so that might present an additional opportunity, but fingers well crossed for that. I think this can be an area where we can reach across the aisle, Michelle, and it may be that some of the policy solutions may be the basis of disagreement between the parties. People from a more conservative bent from me may look at a lesser role for government in terms of programs and the extent to which funding might be delivered ultimately. But I don't see any reason why both sides of politics can't take seriously loneliness as a public health issue and also as a marker for the sort of society we'd like Australia to be. I'm really heartened by the experience in the UK where this has been a bipartisan issue. I'm heartened by having the prospect of a bipartisan motion debated. And at the very least, I'm hopeful that we can reach agreement that we should build a national understanding about loneliness, what it means, who it affects, how it affects them, so that we then can perhaps have a political conversation about how the response should be structured.
And maybe this conversation might help get some responses to you of people's personal experiences, because this is a really important issue and one that's obviously emerging in policy terms.
Most of us as politicians, we make speeches in Parliament, and we're conscious that not everyone's paying attention to every word we say. But having spoken once on this issue in the Parliament, I've really been struck by how many people have spoken to me about it. And it seems to me that at a time when there's a lot of cynicism towards politics, this is an area where we can show that there can be politics with purpose that needn't be hyper-partisan, that can make a real difference to people's lives.
And I'm sure it'll resonate with many people. Andrew Giles, thank you very much for talking with us today. That's all from the Conversations Politics podcast for now. Thank you to my producer, Eliza Burlage. Goodbye for today, and we'll be back again with another interview soon.
Our theme music is by Lee Rosevere. You can find more podcasts from The Conversation on our website at theconversation.com.